Okay, let's call to order the regular meeting of the North Bend Planning Commission for Thursday, May 11th, 2017. First item is to approve our agenda for this evening. Do I have a motion?
So
moved. Motion by Commissioner Lucky and a second?
By Ryan.
Second by Commissioner Ryan. Any changes to the agenda? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Agenda is approved unanimous. Next item is the approval of minutes for April 27, 2017. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
Mr. Chair, knowing that the minutes are never verbatim, but give a sense of what he said, I recommend we approve the minutes as submitted.
Okay, and a second?
Here.
So we have a motion and a second. Any comments or changes? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Minutes are approved. It's unanimous. Next item on the agenda is public comment on non-agenda items. This would be your chance from the public to address us on any matter that's not on our agenda this evening. If you want to speak on something that is on our agenda this evening, we will be holding a public hearing, and Mike, correct me if I'm wrong, at the next Planning Commission meeting, which will be in 2 weeks.
May 25th.
Okay. If you're not able to attend that meeting, you can submit your comments in writing to the city staff, and they will also provide them as permanent copy of our record as well. Okay. With that, is there any member of the public that wishes to address the Planning Commission on something that's not on tonight's agenda?
Yes, I do.
Please state your name sure. and address for the record.
Sure. Michael Thomas, 1231 LaForest Drive, SE. Actually, I wanted to raise an objection to the minutes of the last meeting. I don't feel that the minutes accurately reflect my comments around the development at Ofsted. They take a moment or two to reflect that. Many of the developments near Ofsted, the existing ones that have gone in, no new parks have been added for green space. And I feel, it's a problem. There's additional load from traffic and people using the park in Ofsted. I live right next to Ofsted. I have view of that school field 100% of the time. There's increased trash and issues with that. And actually, very pertinent to docket items 2 and 3, you're increasing the development in the area near Ofsted. And no new parks have gone in. Where is the city spending its money on the fees it's taking from developers in this area? How is the city improving the Ofsted Park? I feel that what the city has done in existing development has been inadequate to address the development load on Ofsted. And I think this is very pertinent to items 2 and 3. I also expect you making comments on May 25th. I'd also like to make some more comments around dockets 1, 2, and 3 as well. Looking at our city charter, I don't see how increased development contributes to a rural lifestyle. We currently have tremendous traffic problems. I don't equate a tremendous amount of vehicular traffic to equate with a nice, pleasant, quiet rural lifestyle. So how do we balance growth and traffic demands with that? That's one of my concerns. Another concern is how do we preserve our green space? So we're increasing our density. If you look at all the new developments that have gone in that are a quarter acre, there's no way they can preserve any trees, nor can you even replant anything. They'll get in the way of utilities. They'll obstruct the cisterns or the water management systems. That's another problem that I see. So how do you address preservation of trees? If you also change from constrained low density to low density residential, you're decreasing the amount of open space. So that's a problem. And there's the roads that service that area, there just simply isn't a lot. There's only 2 roads, the one that goes to Ofsted School, and then there's, I think, Mahoney Drive. So what's the plan to improve the traffic flow in that area? Routing that traffic through the existing Cedar Falls, et cetera, is not going to be an acceptable solution. So I'm just very concerned with the increasing density of 1, 2, and 3, that we're really not addressing that. And docket 1 is very close to my home. I don't feel that going from residential to high-density multifamily is appropriate for docket 1. Thanks.
Is there any other member of the public wish to comment on something that's not on tonight's agenda? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item number 4, which is docket deliberation. And keep in mind, Planning Commission, that we cannot make a motion or make any recommendations until we have our public hearings. So at this point, I'd like you to go through the packet, and if there's any questions for staff or if there's any discussions, this would be the time to put them in so we have them for our next meeting.
Just a question.
Yes, Mr. Luck.
Here's the order, maybe question. I'm concerned we have a time
to, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of order that we might want to place them in.
We did discuss it at our last meeting, and we had recommendations with the citizen dockets first, right?
I think that was discussed.
And it was the item number 4 that you wanted taken first.
Maybe I'm missing this. Has that been ordered somewhere?
No, it hasn't. But I was on your page. That
could take a few minutes just to do that first. Otherwise, two things occur to me. One, we might have some folks here that are here specifically for a certain docket that we're not going to talk about because we won't get the time to it. And then second, that way we know we're not rushed. I hate to get in the middle of something, we'd like to finish it. It's 10:30, 11 o'clock tonight. So,
do you have one that you would like to suggest as first?
I don't have a preference beyond my comments before, which was if it affects only the parties' property that they're asking about, we should deal with those first.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody's taking the time to figure out which one's which there. Mike, help me
so out. So number one is, we could start with number one, that is a private docket. And
okay.
There are probably people here tonight to hear about that one.
Okay. And are there others that also are submitted by the property owner or their representative?
Yeah, why don't we just go through them one by one, and if it's something that was generated by the council, then we'll pass by it.
Okay. Cool.
So, Gary, I don't know. I wasn't at the last meeting, so I don't know what level of introduction was provided for each of these dockets. I can give a very brief summary again if that's desired.
We didn't have all the attachments that went with each docket request. We just had them listed, and we pretty much decided whether or not we were going to hear them. So this would be the first time we're discussing them.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you want to go ahead with item number one, Mr. McCarty, I'd appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah, so this is a docket, and the Planning Commission, and there's extra copies. Looks like they're all gone now of the packet. A couple pages in is a map of the location of the dockets. So you see that in the color photo of the zoning map. Docket number one considers the area that's between North Bend Way and Cedar Falls Way, just east of the roundabout and before you get to Thrasher Avenue. This docket is requesting to change the zoning from low-density residential, which is a single-family zone, to high-density residential, which is a multi-family zone. It was submitted by a private party, Mr. Ruches. I do not know what his relationship to any of these properties is. He's got an address from Fall City, but he's requested that all of those properties within that island there be rezoned to high density residential.
Question on something like that. Does it have some legal interest?
No, you don't. Any citizen can request and provide a docket for consideration of an issue. So you don't have to have any particular property interest. To do so.
So, Mr. I'm not sure how we pronounce his name. So, are the parcels that he's submitting this docket request only involving his property?
I don't know what his property is, actually. He's circled the properties in that area.
So, I'm going back to the point I made earlier. We're going to dial this down to choose which ones to deal with first. And I don't know if we need to get a motion to get there, but if we're going to spend time on something, that's just because it's number one versus it's the property owner who's submitting the docket request. I want to kind of get to that before we spend the night on stuff and not get to the one we've got to get to or need to get to. So the introduction piece,
mm-hmm.
I don't mean to cause a problem.
So
the introduction will lead to longer discussion and then we'll be
I'm only thinking that I don't, docket 2 and 3 on our list were somewhat of a owner of a lot, where
okay.
Number 4 is a zone change, right?
Yeah. So we could certainly start with 2 and 3.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So if you look,
does everybody agree?
Okay. If you look back at the map, dockets 2 and 3 relate to the constrained low-density residential zone that's down in the Maloney Grove area. And those were submitted by property owners within that district requesting that their properties be rezoned from the constrained low-density residential to low-density residential, so from half-acre lots to 4 units per acre. Just to give a little bit, yeah.
The property is currently zoned by the county. It's inside the county.
No, this is the pre-annexation zoning within our comprehensive plan. So not these problems.
Are the owners looking to annex?
I don't know the answer to that.
It really doesn't matter. It's within our urban growth boundary, and the Planning Commission and the City Council can assess the zoning, and it's up to those landowners whether or not they want to annex into the city to get that zoning. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but it sounds like it's a down zone to the current status. Right now, it's 4 per acre.
Yeah, under county.
And they're going to, by the county, and to annex, they're going to get 2 per acre. Why would they want to annex?
I don't know all the benefits of city services versus county.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it would be 4 per acre. Typically, a zoning designation within the county is 5-acre lots. I don't know what the specific county zoning is in effect right now.
Okay. We've got to know that, then. Have this discussion mean anything? It seems like.
Do we have a property owner here that knows?
I believe it's 5-acre lots for the county.
Okay.
But the recommendation from the county when they did the King County Comprehensive Plan was 4 acres per lot.
So, yeah, to give some history on this, this was zoned low-density residential, 4 units per acre, 2 years ago. During the Comprehensive Plan update, the Planning Commission had made a recommendation on other properties within the floodplain to designate those as constrained low-density residential, recognizing the development constraints of the floodplain, floodway, wetlands, et cetera. When the council took that up and considered the amendments, they also expanded that constrained low-density residential zone to additional areas to provide rural character, larger lot sizes, based on comments that they'd heard from the community. And these properties were included in that. So the docket now before you, the property owners have requested to go back to the 4 units per acre.
I'm inclined to, just to start the discussion, I'm inclined to agree with that. When you look at the property, there is a certain amount of off-site water that constrains the lower part of those properties. You can see it coming in onto the freeway. There's a clear drainage that goes across the property from south to north and then northwest. And above that, when you look at the properties, they're well-drained. They're in grass. As a forester, I look for tree species to see if water's impacting them. I don't see any fir growing out there, which bothers me, even in the areas that seem dry, because fir will survive, in shallow water, but certainly they prefer no water. So you see a lot of hardwoods, and you see a lot of broadleaf trees on the southern end of the property, which tells me there's probably a very low water table, so there might be water issues there. But certainly the entire area that for both dockets 2 and 3, they're not constrained on the upper part, so we ought to be thinking about what does the land tell us. The roads in that area need a lot of work, no question about that. They're rural grade roads, but they would not hold up to any kind of impact by any kind of higher density development. So I'm talking against my argument on that way. All these docket items add a traffic into our neighborhoods, and our roads aren't built for it. So I'd like to know that in something like this, where we're talking about higher density, we're also talking about better roads. I don't think we can do one without the other.
So, Mike, to Commissioner Ryan's point, it's 32 acres, 4 homes per acre, let's just say 120 homes. What do you think that road capacity would be? Can it still be under its current condition, or would it be upgraded to a different road standard for that volume of traffic?
So the road standard would remain the same. It's a local access street. However, any development that comes in has to go through what's called a concurrency determination, and that's a determination that there's adequate services to serve the needs of that development. And as a part of that, they would have to provide a traffic report that shows what's the level of service impacts to intersections within the area. And as a part of our concurrency determination, we've got a level of service D standard that you cannot go below. And if you go below that standard, if your traffic impact analysis for that development shows that you're creating traffic that takes you below that level of service D, you're therefore required to provide improvements to those intersections in order for us to be able to approve the development.
Is there anybody here on the Planning Commission not clear on the level A, B, C, D that we're grading intersections? Because I barely remember from our transportation plan, D equates to, what, a five-minute wait time or a three-minute wait time? For each letter down, right, there's a standard of service that you would wait at a stoplight or wait at an intersection. And so if you raise that up, then you force certain changes to happen in order to meet that traffic standard. So that's what Mike is explaining. We have a D, and so whoever builds has to maintain that level of service rating.
I have some anecdotal experience on that all the time. If I want to go left, if I'm heading north, let's say I'm on Maloney Drive, if I want to go left on Cedar Falls, I'm waiting 5 minutes right now without any traffic behind me, because that wheel is turning so fast for the exit, I can't get across. And it makes me nervous to think we're going to be adding more traffic to those north arterials without having some kind of a system that slows traffic down or provides stopping or maybe a second lane. I just don't understand the technique there. But we're adding traffic to south of Cedar Falls. We're not adding any road improvements or any signaling or any signage that is going to support the interaction of traffic coming off those side roads.
So
very concerned.
I hear what you're saying, and I just want to ask Mike if he remembers when we were talking about our comp plan update. I had talked about, and I don't know if Jim also, or our former chair, had also supported it. It was another east-west kind of main road.
That's right. Yep.
That would happen somewhere out along.
Yeah,
that
we road. Have a significant number of improvements planned in our transportation capital improvement plan. We've got that connection
Could you explain what that is? That
particular one on 140th, I believe it is, southeast 140th. That's intended to be a major, over time, a major east-west connection through the city. And with an eventual long-term plan of crossing the river at that point to get back into South Fork Avenue Southwest and out towards the freeway as another kind of connection across the river.
I believe it's 136.
136, thank you.
So does that help understand, like, there are some plans in place that aren't on this map that talk about how to move traffic in different areas?
It'll help me understand it better. Otherwise, I'm just going to be an obstacle to the discussion.
Mike, is it possible for our next meeting to get any of those up?
I think I'm also trying to keep us focused on the docket at hand. We can talk about transportation improvements.
I just think it goes to addressing that question.
Can I throw 2 cents out?
Yes.
So we might, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but generally speaking, it seems like we could go with any density plan that we, with the city or whoever decides, they're still going to run into a linchpin at the roads. You could say that you could build a certain density, but if they can't get through concurrence and everything else, they're done. You've got to wait until it all falls in line. So that doesn't bother me too much, particularly when folks want to go back to the way it used to be. To say, I'm not too worried about the roads because whatever they become, they're going to have to deal with the road standards at the time they make their submittal for whatever they want to build. So it almost kind of covers itself. And you can change the road standards between now and then, too, right? Mm-hmm.
Scott, did you have a point that you wanted to make?
Yeah, so we don't, the city doesn't have any plans to annex that area in?
No, not currently.
And when you say the city, you mean the citizens haven't petitioned the city?
It would be the citizens in that area who would want to.
Yeah.
So just for now, we have a placeholder that would be if.
Our urban growth boundary dictates where we zone up to. And so we zone that land as if it would one day annex in. But without a petition from the majority of the residents who live in that area, the city doesn't reach out generally.
Yeah.
And if an owner owns 60% of the land being annexed, that takes care of it. Gets annexed. But right now, I think that docket 1, 2, and 3, there's the two owners involved. There might be others, I'm not sure, but they own the majority of the property, so if they want to annex, they'll be able to annex.
subject to the public process.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I have a question. How many homes was Cedar Falls?
That's roughly 140.
And what park space did they provide for that development?
They provided 3 mini parks and 5% of the total land area as park space.
3 parks. Are they like acre each or a quarter acre?
Less than an acre each.
And so with a 112 home development, if those parcels developed in that way, they would have to develop some kind of parks in there to
serve. Anything that's over 30 units is required to provide on-site park space. If they're under 30 units, they're required to provide a fee in lieu so that the city can purchase singular pieces, so you don't wind up just getting these very insignificant park areas.
Pocket parks.
And I guess what could be done to improve Opstead's?
So Opstead is a school. It's not a city park, so it's our park impact fee revenue cannot go to making improvements within the school. We collect school impact fees that go to provide improvements to the school district's facilities as fit, or as the school district sees fit per its school capital facilities plan.
So it actually helps the school to build around it. In terms of
it's providing the impact fees from the development to the school district, yes.
Or just because the district, in general, it's up to them to allocate whether it's offset or within the whole mean.
Yeah, on their capital facilities plan.
I think it might go for new school construction, but I don't know if it goes to maintenance or upgrades. I think that's in there. It's a different bond that I've seen. It's a maintenance bond. So I don't know that it would improve.
Not maintenance, but it could go to expanding facilities.
Okay. On docket 3, there is a little bit of a blue line that goes through it. Is that supposed to represent a creek or something?
That's the creek I found. Okay. It's a seasonal creek. It comes off of Rattlesnake. It comes over the freeway.
Yeah, there's some drainage swales within that area. So any development have to provide buffers if it meets the criteria of a creek or stormwater conveyance if it's just a swell.
Well, where I was going, is it Terrenwood that created that big storm facility underground and then the park over the top?
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's a way to do it here because I didn't find my sewer map, but I didn't think it was out that far. They would have to either bring it for that density, right?
To accommodate the stormwater?
Yeah.
There's a number of ways that a development could accommodate their stormwater requirements under the King County Surface Water Design Manual. Some of it could be vaulted. A number of developments provide bioswales, like you see in Cedar Falls, infiltration, detention ponds. So that's up to the developer determining, based on their soil conditions and what they want to do with the site, how they address their stormwater.
Wasn't the city, not the county, knocking on doors out in that neighborhood, seeing if anybody wanted to sell to the county, get out of the floodplain?
The county was exploring levee setbacks in that area, looking for to possibly acquire properties along the river for that purpose.
Are they successful?
Not to date. I think it's
with what we're doing and what we're seeing with these properties now, would that have an impact on what they're trying to do?
The dockets before you aren't in that general area. The dockets tonight for this constrained low density residential are outside the floodplain.
Okay. Good. So I'm just trying to understand, if we go one way and they say no, we're going a different way, they take precedent in that since it's in the county.
Well, the city can zone as it sees fit. The county's process is based on their own desires. And
are we likely to follow the county? We're dependent upon them for a lot of things.
Well, this is outside the floodplain, so it's not relevant to their planning process.
It is a fish issue for their, that's the bottom line for them. It's a fish issue. fish issue.
Right? Well, not on these parcels.
The flooding issue is the principal reason that they've been looking for the levee setbacks.
Right. But flooding all barrels down to the fish, I'm sure that's the sequence. I just want to make sure that if the county has a serious idea about this property and what they want to do with it, we ought to be coordinating with them before making decisions on it.
They're not looking to acquire properties outside the floodplain.
Okay.
I remember in this discussion when we recommended the rezoning and the constrained low density that there was a distinction between floodplain and floodway that Commissioner Gildersleeve talked a lot about this area in particular being affected during the flood in the 1950s at some point. I'm just wondering, so the docket request says it's not in the floodway. Is it in the, what is the difference between floodway and floodway?
Yeah, this is the flood map here. These are the properties of the docket in over here. So floodplain is shown in blue. The floodway is shown in pink.
Okay.
And the difference between the two
floodway
are?
Floodway is an area that new structures are not allowed.
That's correct.
You can still build in the floodplain as long as you're elevating those structures to 2 feet above the flood elevation.
All right. So looking at that, thank you.
Floodway is the water. So if he says floodplain, he's obviously out in the floodway.
Yeah.
But he is apparently outside the floodplain.
It's outside of both.
Outside of both, yes.
Yeah. Right. And so I'm remembering in our discussion, our focus, at least, was primarily the floodway. So I'm wondering at what point and why it got expanded.
That was up to the City Council.
I think it would be important for us to understand why that's changed.
The reasons that the Council expressed on that were to reflect rural character.
Okay.
To see additional large lots. They had heard comments from the community about trying to preserve rural character, keep densities down, and limit growth. So that's why they expanded it to additional areas.
That was my question, too. All
right. You could argue that somebody's docket request are going to revert back to the way it was with some of the energy behind the request.
Yeah.
Is there an indication that the council's view that this is going to provide large lots for large landowners, does that have any basis in fact, or is it just something they want to have happen?
Well,
what's the evidence that's a desirable spot for large lots?
I guess the general thought behind zoning the outside of your city as lower density and concentrating the growth inside the core of the city where there's more services, more accessibility. And that is the general thought behind it. It's to concentrate growth in the downtown core area. And as you get further out was lower density.
And it probably came into the thinking was that they were thinking about the possibility of having that in some way flood constrained, and therefore large lots in a flood constrained area makes sense rather than making a lot of smaller lots.
I didn't, and you can correct me if you've heard differently, I didn't hear anything related to flood. It was just about what Mike said, rural character and larger lots.
But they won't be needing to provide services out there. They'd be able to put them on septic systems, et cetera. They wouldn't need to deal with the expense of city services.
Provided they could get permitted with a high water table.
Yeah.
That's another factor that until they become part of the city, they can get a septic.
Yeah.
If they're inside the city limits at the current code regs, no problem.
No, the council recently revised that. You can provide a septic system if you're beyond 150 feet from the nearest available sewer line.
Thank you.
150.
Yeah.
And the council passed that.
Cool. I catch up.
Thank you, Mike.
So, I think, looking at the land, I think there needs to be some consideration provided to what the land is telling us that we can do on it. I think dockets 2 and 3, the land is all the same. It's variable. There's certain parts of it that I think probably need to be have less density on it because of what I'm certain is shallow water systems, which makes it fairly expensive to develop. And usually the developer will try to squeeze an additional house somewhere else where it's easier to build and free up some property that isn't suitable for building. But generally speaking, I think that it's not, in my view, what I looked at today, what's going into our valley is not rural, doesn't give me a rural feel. This doesn't give me any sense of rural feel, what I see going on around town these days, the pitch roads and the narrow lots and it's not North Bend. And larger lots may give us that feeling, but I think it's the architecture that's really bothering me. It seems we need to be a bit forceful on the land, on the developer, what architecture we want, what we will codify and make sure we get what we want. I don't think North Bend looks like a Swiss chalet kind of town that's looking that way with the pitched roofs. You can't even get on your roof anymore, it's so darn steep. So I'm worried about putting those into flat plain valleys in North Bend. It won't look like us. And so I don't want to see more density, particularly in the very exposed plains. I'd like to see less density, but I think 4 per acre would work, probably 3 would be better. But I don't want to have to be forced into agreeing to putting 5 or 6 per acre to compensate for more development on sensitive land. I think that'll be just carve sensitive land out and call it non-developable land and deal with that. But I don't think the urban game where people get double up on their density because they give something away that doesn't work for us here. It doesn't give us what we're looking at.
So, Dick, if I can interrupt, Mike, I know it's in our code to allow certain ability to work with developers when we have sensitive areas to offset that with park space that they normally have to require. Is there something we can do that is in our planning commission's purview that alters that, that it's just considered, you know, sensitive spaces and non-developable?
That's the case. So you take out critical areas when you're looking at your developable area.
And for me and the public, when we say a critical area, what has to meet the level of critical?
So wetlands and streams, floodways, designated wildlife areas. And those would be critical areas, and they're buffers.
Okay. Does that help you?
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your comments. Very thoughtful. Anything further on docket 2 or 3?
No, but I'm backtracking if I could.
Yes, sir.
So
just tell us where.
The conversion from docket to council retreat, what does that mean to us?
So this one wasn't a subject of the council retreat. There are other dockets that were brought up by the council during their retreat that were brought forward as dockets for the consideration of the public and the planning commission.
Put forward by the docket process or by the council?
Put forward by the council.
Okay. Because I'm just seeing 4 here. 1 through 4, and then it converts over to council retreat for the rest.
So those would be the ones that were submitted by the public.
Okay. But I'm thinking about us and our duties tonight in the next couple of meetings. We have 10 to consider, or is the city council suggesting in their retreat that they're going to process those?
No, they're coming back for your consideration. So they submitted those as dockets to put into the docket process so that the planning commission and the public would review those, discuss them, make a recommendation back based on the public comment about does this make sense, is it a good idea to move forward.
Yeah, because, Jim, I'm really anxious to talk about Docket 7 on our list. That's North Bend Way standards and bike lanes.
So I don't want to speak out of line or turn at all, but I'm back to my same point again. If there are 10 docket requests that we need to consider, can't do it all tonight.
Well, no. None of your recommendations are going forward tonight. We've got the public hearing on May 25th. At which time you'll hear formally from the public. We look for your recommendations on the dockets after you hear from the public.
Is that the case on docket 4?
All of the dockets.
Okay.
So I know you guys made an initial recommendation on that at your last meeting, but you shouldn't be making your formal recommendation to the council until you hear from the public.
So between now and the 25th, you said?
Yeah.
Are we meeting again?
No.
So we're going to cover a number of these dockets tonight.
Continue at your next meeting with the public hearing.
Massage through the public hearing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you can continue after that as well if you need additional time to consider.
So,
or if there's ones that were fine after the public hearing, we can move them forward.
So, like I said in the last meeting, I get energized by the opportunity to answer someone's question. And if a landowner in the city has said, hey, I'd like to make this change, we owe them a duty of not screwing around and taking months to get them an answer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about since we first met tonight. So my way of dealing with this list initially was to say, hey, let's be sure we're talking about the docket request that only impact that particular person's property. And we're talking about code changes that affect lots of land, lots of multiple property owners. That seems like we need to push that out so we make sure we get the public hearing involved and everything else. So I'm asking now, are there dockets here that are clearly only involving the submittal owner's property?
We just discussed
1 through 4.
Just 1 through 4. Nothing else.
Other dockets affect individual properties, but they weren't submitted by property
right,
owners.
That's where I'm headed.
Yeah.
So are we going to, because somebody sounded like they were. Like number 2 is 4 parcels. Is that all Mr. Helgeson's property?
I don't know. That's the dockets. That's the docket that he submitted.
Those are all yours?
No, they're not mine.
They're all his.
Ken Helgeson.
Okay.
He's passed away.
Ah. Okay. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
So, okay. Anything further on 2 and 3? Or can we move to item number 1? 13 parcels totaling 10 acres from LDR to HDR between East North Bend Way and Southeast Cedar Falls Way from the roundabout to Maloney Grove Southeast.
And you can also consider this kind of together with docket number 5, I believe it is, and that's one that was submitted by the council, but it addresses largely the same thing and it's in the same area. So the docket number 5 is the properties just to the north of this docket on the other side of North Bend Way. Both of those dockets are to change from low-density residential single-family to high-density residential multifamily.
And it was at our last meeting where I think Jenna confirmed that we've seen this request before.
You have, yeah. Yeah, for the council docket regarding North Bend Way, the Torgerson properties, that was brought to you in 2 prior years. I think it was 2014 and 2015. The Planning Commission had recommended approval on those. If they went to council, the council, upon hearing additional public comment, decided not to approve the dockets at that time. At their retreat, with some new council members and new discussion, I believe their intent was to allow for additional, their interest is to provide additional residential development in the downtown area. Reducing development as you get further out from downtown. So therefore the docket was, they wanted to support this docket idea to increase the residential density in the proximity of the downtown.
And so the new city hall is actually to the east of these properties.
That's right.
So in essence, we're kind of expanding our downtown core.
We're willing to way to one way and Cedar Falls to another way, we're creating a disaster for the city and getting people out of their apartments. That's a great location for apartments, by the way. It's perfect. People can get out of the place if we have one-way roads. That's the only way this is going to work. I think that having apartments around the city center, which is where the city hall will be, the fire station, all this going on there, this is going to become a hub. But we're going to have a traffic disaster if we don't figure this out along with this docket. We can't decide this docket without knowing how the traffic is going to be managed. And I see one-way road as being the best way to work a way out of it, in addition to some signaling going on. But if we try to get people out of that peninsula of high growth, and they're on their own to try to get out and get to where they have to go, it'll be a real cruel joke.
So again, any development has to pass that concurrency test, and they have to provide improvements to intersections when they're failing, when the development causes the intersection to fail, or we cannot approve the development. That's in our code already.
I'm going home. I'm wasting my time. Well, I can't decide this if we can't talk about roads.
Well, that is kind of a little bit about outside of what we're here to do. We have the transportation plan, and in that transportation plan is, if you're not happy with the wait times that have been put forth, that's the place to make the change. That forces a developer then to say, you can only impact this intersection for this period of time. And so if they can't meet that standard, then you can't have the development in there. And that's one way that you can limit growth. Mike, this planning commission has asked for the transportation plan. We've also asked for a calendar of items that we could get. Has there been any movement on that at staff's, I guess?
Honestly, no, because we're just saturated right now with development review and other council initiatives and work to do. We do intend to bring that to you.
Okay. So with that said, I don't know if that helps you, but when we get the transportation plan, you can put your passion for traffic to work there. At this point, this docket has to meet those standards that are inside that comprehensive plan.
Stay with us, Dick. We'll figure this out. I'll throw 2 cents in the kitchen on that.
Yep.
That sounds sort of extreme, one-way streets. But if you thought of it as multiple roundabouts with long lengths, it's kind of interesting. I guess to your point, and I appreciate what Dick's saying, it's like, you know, I really can't decide what I think should go in this land until I figure out the transportation around it. How do we feed it and get it in and out? I totally get it. But if the road standards are modified, correct me, that can almost be done project by project, right?
The road standards for the roadway or for...
The roadway that affects a particular area of town, that can be dealt with very compartmentalized, right?
A development has to comply with the road standards that are adopted for that particular street.
Well, what I'm saying is if we realize development has gotten to a place, and this a particular street is used, not using this project, but any project, any area of town where the street's becoming a problem, that can be focused on and be fixed, regardless of any zoning circumstance or any particular...
Yeah, there's two means of addressing transportation impacts from a development's impact. So the first one is that concurrency test, where if they're creating problems from that development, we either don't approve the development or they're required to do improvements to address it. The other one is their transportation impact fees. So when a development comes in, it's paying an impact fee in order to keep that level of service at passable levels. And they're providing money based on the square footage of the development or based on the number of homes to the city in order to fund our transportation improvement plan. So both of those together are providing impact mitigation as development occurs to keep our roads flowing.
And Mike, where does mass transit come into this type of development in our core?
We work with Metro. Metro provides services out here, but our transportation impact fees don't go directly to Metro.
Not to beat a dead horse, but just wondering what the perimeter, the impact is. So let's say something, there's a new development, you know, far east of town. The majority of people come to school, come shopping in the downtown. Is that within the radius of consideration?
For a transportation impact analysis?
Yes.
Yeah, generally I think it's when it's more than 20 peak hour trips, or 20 trips throughout the day through an intersection is when that's tripped, as when they have to consider that intersection.
Okay.
This is getting outside of my realm of expertise.
And I know this isn't exactly the topic right now. I'm just, I think it does, it is somewhat relevant just in looking at this. Because really, I struggle with any zoning changes, any recommendations that increases the density. You know, we had our 25-year plan for growth last year. I think over the next 25 years, we were supposed to be at 625 houses, and we're already over 700 right now within the first year of that at some point in the permit process. So I liked, you know, our original discussions centered on focusing high-density things near the downtown core for walkability and all that. But, I mean, at this point, I feel like this place is just exploding out of control. And, you know, not pointing the finger anywhere, but even any consideration of more density, just a struggle considering that.
So I appreciate your comments. And I guess I'll go, speaking globally, Puget Sound is the seventh fastest growing region in the country. North Bend sat under the moratorium of no water and didn't grow while everyone around us did. So the developable land from Snoqualmie and Issaquah has vastly depleted. So one could say, you know, we are taking on our share and no more. When you talk about density, you have to think about the people who are in the city, the people who work for the city, the people who work for the schools, work for a police department. And you have to understand the value of housing and what it's been doing. And understand that we have to provide the mix of housing. And when we have the majority of our housing, almost 94% is zoned low density or constrained low density. We have 3% zoned for high density, and out of that 3%, like, there's 1.5% that is not yet developed. So your duty to the citizens of this community fall into how we address that and give them a place to live.
Or vote no.
Or you can vote no.
I have just a comment. It sounds like we don't have any background on the person that submitted this, like why they did. Now, isn't any anything on the city form? Like
no.
To describe why or anything like that? Notes or?
No, this is all that we received. And no, it doesn't require you to give your rationale.
I mean, I agree with what Curtis said, and yeah, with no background on it, I'm inclined to not support it without any rationale. Mm-hmm. I know I'm not voting on that now, but just kind of sharing, kind of like, I like to see some information, mm-hmm. Not just a request in that meeting.
Is Mr. Roche here tonight, just for curiosity?
So, but his neighborhood is.
Yeah, all the other people along the line are here.
Yeah, sure are.
Mike, for our next meeting, could we get somebody from Public Works that can help us understand traffic or traffic questions? Could we make that request that they'll be here at the public hearing?
It's
fine. Sure.
Can I say one more time, just because
yep.
I feel like I'm out of sorts. So this, again,
Jen, docket one has 13 parcels in it. Does the same party own all 13 parcels?
No.
So, back to my original point of spending time on dockets, this one is not being made, is not applied for by the owner of the property.
We've already talked about those. We've already talked about the owners of the property. This is the next one on the list.
I thought we were on number one.
Yes.
Who we do two and three?
Those are the only two that are the owners.
Okay.
Number
so
four
five,
is
six,
a...
Seven, eight, nine.
Those are all council.
Okay. All right. So this is our last one if we stay on the top four.
Unless you keep interrupting with that.
Well said. Well said.
All right. So anything else on number one?
Are we compelled to have a vote on this?
No.
We cannot.
Okay. We need to have a public hearing. Yep. And any questions or research that we need to have. Mike, just for my reminder, docket number one was the one that was requested before, or was it docket five?
Docket number one was from Mr. Roach's. Docket number five came from the council.
But that was the
both
one.
Both of them addressing the ordinance in kind.
But the one that we'd seen before was docket request number five.
Number five, yes.
Okay.
Is it possible that docket five and one are linked in some way?
They're not linked. They're submitted by one submitted by the council, the other submitted by a private individual. The only link is that they're in the same proximate area dealing with low density residential and high density residential.
But would one have been requested before the other in a logical sequence, or would it just coincidence they both came together?
Does that make sense as far as I know?
I mean, it makes sense that they both be treated the way they're being requested, but just your other council made a separate move against the number five at the same time that the one came up.
It's a good point, but it's also part something that we've done on the Planning Commission with docket requests, is if there's one request for one side of the street or one middle of the road, you can amend what's around there. That makes sense for planning purposes.
Just a question about process. Like Scott mentioned, it would be nice to know some background or some rationale as to why this is. I'm assuming, well, I don't want to make any assumptions, but one of the other dockets provides some background reasons for the reconsideration. Helps me understand why we're talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
Is this something that we do? Would we contact Mr. Roush and invite them, or is it just totally on them to come and present and make their case?
It's on them. I don't think it becomes the city's obligation to seek out their inquiry.
Okay. That's kind of what I was wondering. Other than that, it's just the public hearing and this meeting that we have to this reconsideration.
Okay. Thank you. I have a comment. It's kind of related to what Gary said. You know, makes a good point as far as where to kind of have a area of focus growth. And I guess at some point they'll get to draw a line. And that's what I would just share with everyone, is that, you know, we can extend that line further or we can keep it where it is. And so that's where, I guess for me in general, I see leaving it where it is. I think fits more of the rural character in that way versus extending it out. I mean, at what point, you know, does another docket request come in? Oh, let's just move it a little bit farther because there's a need. Well, there's always going to be a need. I mean, potentially, because as you described, the Puget Sound area is growing, right? You know, so we just keep moving that line until it's 10 units per acre throughout the whole city just because there's a need. So just kind of something to think about, to consider where that line is. Whether it's where it is now or it's expanded at this point, or, you know, at some point, yes, we may have to change things, but it's now the right time.
Yeah, and I just want to say that, you know, there is talk about urban growth boundaries being moved, and if you all are familiar with Growth Management Act, the whole idea behind that was to keep growth within the cities. And so if the cities can't grow anymore, then you start expanding out into that green landscape that was supposed to be preserved. My effort is to not encroach upon that. So. Number five, just any sense on why they put a density cap on that, the council?
I think it was, I was not at the council retreat where they discussed that, but probably reflecting the comments that they received before from the surrounding neighborhood about concerns of too much density in proximity to the single family homes.
So would that fall under high density with density restrictions then?
Yeah, the intent was high density residential up to 10 units per acre.
Okay. Council retreat number six, neighborhood business zone.
Are you going to do another ballot? Yeah. Is this docket six and 10?
No standalone single family. Consider multifamily mixed use with ground floor commercial and upper floor residential along North Bend Way.
Yeah, so this one we're actually asking for you to defer on until your June meeting.
Okay.
We can take public testimony on it at the public hearing, but the council committee, the Community and Economic Development Council Committee, is also reviewing this overall table, and they're going to be bringing additional suggestions to the Planning Commission in June. So we'd like to just take all of it at once and give it to you to so that you have a more organized opportunity to review that.
Okay. And then number seven, North Benway Street Standards.
Yeah.
I know that there are some cool illustrations being developed.
Yeah, this came again out of the council retreat. Where they were considering how do we maintain our small rural character within North Bend. And something they were looking at is North Bend Way as it goes east out of town. How is that going to look as a development occurs? And what they had recommended was to increase the size of the planter strips and or bioswales. Bioswales are a ditch that's landscaped to address stormwater infiltration and water quality treatment. And they recommended providing additional 6-foot minimum sidewalks and bioswales that are a minimum of 13 feet in width along those segments. So that's North Bend Way from Cedar Falls Way to 140th, and then another section, 140th to 468th Avenue. So all the way out to Trucktown to expand to this new expanded planter strip and bioswale standard. One clarification I'd like to make on this that was really important from a public works perspective is when you get up to where North Bend Way is directly adjacent to I-90, the intent was not to provide a bioswale between North Bend Way and I-90 because that would be somewhat of a no man's land where there's not adjacent development to maintain that planter strip.
Is that by where Tanner Electric substation?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we'll put in some additional language that is just on the north side.
Mike, can you talk a little bit about the city's obligation to modes of transportation from vehicular to pedestrian to bicycle and how we can look at the value of bicycle paths versus two-lane roadway or four-lane roadway for vehicles?
So we're trying to accommodate all modes of transportation, particularly bicycle and pedestrian modes because those are more environmentally friendly, less traffic impact, obviously. We require bicycle lanes on most arterial and collector streets. Sidewalks are required on all streets. And as the traffic speed goes up, so does the width of the sidewalk and the separation from the travel lane.
Okay, that helps.
Question?
Yes.
Are these bike lanes? Space to add a bike lane and all the sidewalks and swales.
There's room within the existing right to accommodate those improvements, yeah.
You just put it up something close to 20 feet, right?
So it looks like, is it two 11-foot travel lanes, a 5-foot bike lane, 8-foot pedestrian path? Docket 7, page 3, the illustration there? Is that
yeah, the illustration is specific to 140th, and that's an additional amount. Right now, 140th has just got the conventional street standard of sidewalk, curb, gutter, planter strip. What the intent here is to preserve the existing native vegetation, the trees that are along 140th, and provide more of a trail standard rather than a hardscape of a sidewalk. That's something that we've heard in previous opportunities for comment from the public, but they want to preserve the rural character, particularly the existing large conifer trees along 140th. So this road standard is a way to do that.
Mike, is this similar to what's planned for Cedar Falls Way?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know if you can elaborate on that for everybody else.
Yeah, so Cedar Falls Way as well. We've received comments before that, particularly with the development of the cottage development that's down by the church. There was a lot of clearing that took place there. It met the code requirements, but it's more than what the community desired. It does not look very attractive from the perspective of maintaining that forested character along Cedar Falls Way. So the intent is to redevelop our street standards and some of our clearing requirements to increase the level of trees that are retained in development. And this section here is particular to 140 to accommodate the same purpose.
And is there also a bike path that's planned along Cedar Falls Way that's kind of that 8 foot wide or something?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that part of parks or how is that going to get developed?
As developments occur, they would provide the improvements within the right of way there.
Okay.
I guess we're talking about this one, Docket 7.
It's all the North Bend Way to Trucktown. There's an illustration. Yeah, there isn't an illustration. And so, Mike, I was thinking that there was an illustration that the city council was working on for North Bend Way. Do you know of any?
I don't know of any. I'll ask about that.
My request is if there are any illustrations that help visualize what they're thinking, could we get that at our next meeting?
First turn off at the mini storage.
Yeah, go by Wood River. I'm just wondering, Mike, is there any opportunities to look at our city and apply the same street standard that is proposed for Southeast 140th? And I guess I'd ask the commission to do some homework and think about where this should also be applied and consider how it would look for especially along our major gateways into our city, how we could apply the same standard.
So this is a simplification of the table. It's split into those segments because there's different standards that apply to different sections of North Bend Way. What you're looking at here is just the sidewalk standard. There's additional standards concerning turn lanes and various other things that apply to different segments. That's why it's basically the same thing that you're seeing here that has to go into different sections of the code.
What are the differences between the two sections here? Between
140th, Cedar Falls Way to 140th, mm-hmm. and then 140th to 468. Yeah. So those standards differ based on, I believe it's sidewalk width, and principally regarding to the Tanner Trail. That first segment has got the Tanner Trail in it, so it's got a different standard in other sections that you don't see here about how that trail is designed.
So the north side would be sidewalk.
Anything else for docket number 7? Seeing none, I guess we can move on to number 8. Mike, this is...
Yeah, this is another docket that the Planning Commission has considered in the past. And this is the neighborhood business zone where it's across the street from the Tannerwood neighborhood. All of that area between 140th and North Bendway currently is neighborhood business. However, as this neighborhood has developed, it's developed principally as a single-family neighborhood rather than with businesses and various uses that could otherwise be permitted under the neighborhood business zone. So to help preserve the character of that neighborhood and keep it more of a single-family neighborhood, the proposal here is to change the properties that you see shown in yellow to the single-family zone.
I guess I'd want to ask the commission to relay the other change that we have on the docket from the council, which is to remove single family from neighborhood business. And I think by removing neighborhood business from part of our landscape, it's really important to keep neighborhood business pure. Existing uses can continue, but new uses should be neighborhood business oriented in those areas, right? So if we consider this change, I want to stress that they're both important, I think, to go together. If that makes sense.
One additional thing I want to mention with this is there's a little leftover slice that we need to figure out what to do with. If the Planning Commission chooses to recommend changing this to single-family residential, there's a piece that's currently neighborhood business, which would either need to be added to the adjacent Employment Park 2 zone, kept as neighborhood business, or converted to the low-density residential. It's the current use of that site is an industrial use. It's got some storage and outdoor and indoor storage facilities.
So,
what is a homeless shelter? How's that classified? Homeless.
A homeless shelter? We don't have that as its own land use category right now.
But would fit into a neighborhood business category?
I think we have to figure that out. Right now, we don't have that as its own land use category.
Is it anybody?
It's a group home we have. Is it in, it's in low density and it's in high density, I think.
Well, group home being a permanent facility.
Assisted living concept, right? Home, assisted living.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think if we have anything else. Then, what was your basis, though?
Just a grand idea. We probably need a shelter for homeless people. That might be a good place for it. It's on the road. It's near services.
In here next week, Dick.
What's up?
You're going to have the press in here to talk about.
Okay. So that was directly to the east, that triangle kind of piece you're talking about?
Yeah, it's just something that's currently zoned neighborhood business, and we need to consider what's the most appropriate zoning designation for that if the other is converted to the low density residential.
Neighborhood business is the businesses allowed in that zone are compatible with residential living.
Generally, single-family residential is allowed in the neighborhood business zone.
Current shops and glare 24 hours night glare.
It does allow some auto-related uses that would be less appealing adjacent to a residence, but it's a transition. It's not a full industrial zone.
And you still have noise standards where you couldn't exceed so far from your property line.
No, that works. Never good.
Yeah. Okay. Could you have like a Montessori there with pedestrian into this?
Yeah. Schools actually, and Montessori's or daycare related uses are allowed in all zones.
Help the county or help the council and help ourselves for later by making your point about the
triangle?
The triangle parcel, yeah.
That they should include their recommendation for that as well.
Well, we can just take it upon ourselves to help them.
Yeah, we can consider what's the appropriate use for the zoning for that parcel, make that recommendation with the council. So here's a map of that area. This is helpful. I didn't include this in your packet, but I think I will for the next time. You can see all of this area, which reflects the yellow, has developed as single-family uses. This is kind of the question mark, this triangle parcel here. Right now, it's got these little storage units on at one end, and they've got various vehicles and industrial type of uses parked on the site. It could remain neighborhood business. Zoning it to low-density residential wouldn't reflect the existing use, but you can zone for whatever the best use is, and eventually over time it converts to that use. Whatever this would be now would be a legal non-conforming use should it convert to a single-family use. Yeah.
Mike, since you brought up, you know, the current employment park zoning, at the city council meeting there was some discussion by the public about EP zoning being on the east and west side of town and nothing in the center of town. Has there been any thought about where those other places could be, or is there anybody talking about that in the planning staff?
We haven't heard of that. I haven't heard that request, but we've got the employment park zone that goes down Redmond Way, closer to Mount Sly Road, so that would be maybe more in the center.
Okay.
Otherwise, we wouldn't necessarily want it in the very center of town, just given the nature of compatibility of uses.
Mm-hmm. And traffic flow. Mm-hmm.
You know, we talked about that EV zone out there by Nintendo. And we talked about the residential. That doesn't seem to be an EP site to me. It doesn't seem to have any, it's either going to be all residential, or at least the flat will be EP, but nothing on top seems to be conducive to EP.
Because of the topography?
Yeah. I just wonder if that's been, on hindsight, if that's not a proper zone to EP out there. You've got a pretty good road cut off with Nintendo. They're not going any further west than that road. It seems like residential, particularly as you get higher up on that hill, high-end residential would be compatible. It's a very quiet zone for Nintendo out there. Maybe we should have my experience. But it just seems like that's we're using that as a, we're counting on that as EP inventory, but I don't think anybody thinks of it that way.
I do. I worked at, I think it was called the Red West campus of Microsoft, and the buildings were built with a river that ran down the middle and just kind of sloped down the hillside. Beautifully done. I just, you know, you leave it to an architect and some engineers and what they can create. I think, with the code that we have to protect streams and wetlands and sensitive areas, I think you can develop in a thoughtful way. The other thing that I'd like to keep that open for is a college campus, if the hope one day would come.
That's a good one, 980-18 interchange.
You think so?
Sorry.
That could be. Okay. So anyway.
It's cleaned up.
Anything further on docket number 8?
Oh, thank you. Yeah, that is a typo.
And then I guess it makes sense to agree to have the neighborhood business in the front of North Bend Way. I think that looks like the rationale behind changing it. But I guess if we take it away, where are we going to place it?
Place what?
The neighborhood business. So that's just something that, you know, should be considered.
That was part of my comment was another change we have is to take away the ability for somebody to develop new single family inside of neighborhood business, which means you keep it more pure for neighborhood business type uses. So you're going to protect it, but we are losing some neighborhood business.
And that was that other docket that we've asked you to hold off on that our council committees were working through right now, looking at taking single-family residential out of the neighborhood business. So that'll be coming back.
You know, Scott, if we were to have another east-west corridor, that might be another, you know, main street where it made sense for neighborhood business in my mind. So I don't know, Mike, if there's any map that we have that shows proposed future roadways. Is there anything like that that we could get?
Future roadways? We have our transportation map that shows future connections.
Yeah, could we get that at our next meeting?
Mm-hmm. That might help. Does business include medical professional type services or anything?
I think like clinics. Or a doctor's office, like a dental office or eye care.
Yeah, dentists. Is that neighborhood business?
Sorry, Dick, I don't have the code memorized.
Yes, yeah, those would be uses of neighborhood business. So.
For me, I need a good quack.
I hear we have something to tap. Okay. Good point, Scott. Anything else on docket number 8? Okay, number 9 says EP1 zone, no residential uses.
Yeah, so this docket came largely as a result of the development agreement that the Planning Commission considered, the Council recently considered, about the area in the employment park zone west of Nintendo, where there was a proposal to allow residential development in that zone. And at the same time, looking at the what kind of residential uses are allowed within the employment park zone, currently it's allowed, residential is allowed on upper floor dwelling units. The intent of that originally was to allow a mixed-use industrial type of scenario. So if somebody had a mechanic shop, a welding shop, whatever, allow them to also have a residence above that. The concern is that it's not very clear how much residential could be allowed over what industrial use. So it could be abused to be a predominantly residential development that has a little small amount of industrial below it, which would not really be consistent with the purpose of the employment park zone of providing predominantly employment-generating uses. Therefore, the recommendation here to remove it, residential upper-floor dwelling units from the employment park zone.
Mike, is there any thought on creating a new zone for multifamily, or are we going to just keep with downtown core and use that, I guess, to other places that we'd like to implement it?
So multifamily as a use is allowed in a number of different
mixed
zones.
Mixed use, sorry.
Oh, mixed use.
Yeah.
Mixed use is also allowed in a number of different zones. It's allowed in the neighborhood business zone and the multifamily zone.
High density.
Certain limited uses.
Okay.
It's allowed in the downtown commercial zone and the interchange mixed use zone.
Next question is, we did the Tanner Landing Master Plan Overlay District, where the property owner, I don't know, it was last docket request, asked for the backside where there was low-density residential to have that as multifamily, right? So then that property owner could come in with that same mindset and petition us for an overlay, even if we removed it from the zone.
That, you're talking about the overlay north of North Bend Way, where the apartment development
south.
Is proposed?
South.
South. Okay, that's the Tanner Junction overlay
Sorry.
Zone there. And that would be subject to the specific provisions of that overlay. So there's provisions in there that allow for certain uses contrary to the underlying zone, and which are more specific. So you'd go to those more specific regulations, and they wouldn't be able to submit something inconsistent with that.
So basically the same thing could apply then. If we took out that ability for residential
right.
use, they could still come in and ask for an overlay district with some development provisions that would be acceptable to the city.
They could propose an amendment, but it would still go through the public process that the Planning Commission would make a
right.
recommendation on.
But just trying to say we're not closing the door.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else on number 9? Number 10. Neighborhood business zone property located in the USOD overlay, no single family and no multifamily. I'm just looking at the chart.
10 goes along with number 6, and that's another one that we were going to ask you to defer on.
Okay. It's only 2, right? Yeah. 2 to June?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. McCarty, is there anything you'd like to add?
No. Just look forward to hearing the comment from the public at our next meeting.
Okay, so next meeting we have the public hearing. Cottage update, is that coming back? Don't know until
I'll
Jenna
talk
gets
to Jenna about that. Yeah.
Gets back. I understand the wireless facilities has been greatly revised. Will we be seeing that soon?
Depends on the extent of the revisions. If it's still within the context of your recommendation, then it would just continue forward.
We didn't recommend it.
Oh, then yeah, it'll be coming to you then.
Yeah. I just know.
It hasn't been reviewed by the Planning Commission yet?
We started, and then Lynn took it back to do some research, and she said she doubled the size or something.
Okay, yeah, it'll be coming back to the Planning Commission then.
Yeah.
Ask that question.
Sorry. Well, I'm trying to track it. Okay. Planning Commission procedures.
That is with our attorney right now.
Okay. I do know it came back, but I didn't know it went back to the attorney again. So I will reach out to Jamie because I think she had it last time. Anything for the good of the order?
Yes, sir.
Please.
2 questions. One, I was wondering about where in the process the new athletic fields are.
So they were on hold for a while. We were waiting for them to resubmit. They are in the process. They resubmitted their deposit, which was something that we needed from them. And they expect to resubmit their permit documents within the next couple of weeks.
Second question is Pulte, Echo Ridge.
River Glen,
that one too.
The one next to you?
Yes.
Yeah.
LDR, which has 5-foot minimum setback and a minimum of 15-foot between buildings?
Not for that one. That one was vested to the time of the previous side yard setbacks, or previous setbacks, which was 5-foot side yard, 10-foot front yard.
How many more developments that are in the pipeline are vested?
There's like 600.
Well, vested to the old standards.
To the old standards.
Not very many past that. Also, the Sagali development, the Tanner Road subdivision, is also vested to the prior standard. But I think those two are the only major developments that were not bound to the new standard. He's still continuing to fill the site.
That's allowed to kind of let it go on that long.
Can you hold on that question for Jamie for when she's back? That's her project, and she'll be a lot more familiar with it than I am.
But, Mike, it's true in our code that as long as you're doing something,
yeah.
It's just you can't leave the project idle for
right.
a time.
Some of it's idle. Weeds growing on it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Scott, are you asking if we could make a condition as a development to remove invasive species from property?
I mean, I think it shows, it proves stagnation. I'm not saying I want to see a bunch of homes. I mean, that is the inevitable on that. But yeah, there's a bunch of, it's not, you know, there was, I think it was, I mean, you may be violating, you could say, I don't know, the revegetation measures, because there was probably an effort to cover with dirt and seed it. I think that occurred at one point in time, but now, yeah, there's weeds and stuff growing on it, so maybe, you know, I don't know, there's going to be weed seeds all over that place. It's going to, you know, it's not ideal to, because now
Scotch broom lasts 80 years.
Scotch broom seeds for 80 years on their property, but, you know, the developer will walk away, and, you know, that'll be that. But that's kind of the issue, as those weed seeds spread throughout our whole community. So it's not great to leave it like that, but that's just something I noticed. Mm-hmm. You don't have to, yeah, you don't have to give a comment.
Yeah, Jamie will be here at the next meeting, so you don't come there.
With that, yeah, I'll just ask the Planning Commission to focus on Scotch broom and Stinky Bob as weed pulling this month. Two invasive
and
species.
Get the ivy.
That's a blackberry's not.
Nice.
Sorry, I did have one more question, not just for the urban blend in particular, but any developments if they have homes or lots approved in the initial and the final plotting. After all that, they begin construction. Actually, you know what? We want to make 38 lots.
And no, they're not allowed to do that unless they go back all the way to the start of the process and go back through preliminary plat approval. That's
no,
considered a major revision.
Okay, so you that would apply for any development.
Yeah, you can decrease lots and it doesn't change things, but if you try to increase lots, you have to go back through the hearing.
Project next to the church on 436. What have you seen about the build-out vegetation plan for that project? What's going to be planted by the time the houses are all installed and ready?
So you'll see bioswales like you've seen in the Cedar Falls development, where they've got the swales between the sidewalk and the street, which are planted with pretty lush vegetation for stormwater quality. See the additional trees planted along the perimeters along Cedar Falls Way and along North Bend Way. And that's about it. And there'll be a small mini park just on one end on the inside of the development as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mike, sorry, I just want to say, Mike, you are a wonderful source of information, but to all my planning commission, if you want specifics like this and to see the actual drawings, you go to the planning department and you can see the detail in full color, and that might help you understand more whether or not, you know, that is acceptable and under our guidelines. And then you can come to this meeting and say what you want changed based on that.
And we're happy to pull it out for absolutely anybody, for any member of the public or planning commission or council.
So what I've seen so far, then, we've got 15 trees planted on the east and west boundary, total 7 and 8. They're 3-year-old stock, and that's acceptable for taking down dozens of mature trees to make that project.
What they did meets the code requirements, so if we don't like it, we have to change the code.
So we don't like it.
That's why I asked about the cottage code coming back to us, which is with Jenna.
We should not like it, because that's not what we're looking to get.
We've got that on our radar as something that we want to address in the future.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think that'll be required to plant mature trees, nursery stock, where they get in 10-year-old, 10, 12-year-old trees, and populate that property with those trees. If they're going to have any hope of doing this again, I don't think they did the right thing by the city on that. It's disastrous.
Cottage, I know it's gotten tied up in scheduling and planning and different things going on, but I'd like to restate, I'd like to see the cottage back to us so we can continue the conversation.
Yeah, it will be coming back.
Before the need for the zone goes away.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sort of joking, but not really, because
Yeah. It's getting pushed in from other places.
Jenna's been working on that, and she's just pulled in different directions.
Hey, congratulations to Jenna.
Yeah.
Employee of the year.
Our favorite employee in the Valley. Valley Record.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Congratulations, Jenna. All right, with that, anything further?
A quick update on the hotel, please.
There is no update. I'm waiting for a recent medal.
Play
for
your kayak.
All right, motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. Motion has been moved and seconded by Commissioner Von Trapp. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We are adjourned. 8:37. Sorry, Elizabeth. Hope you're well.